You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto, and we are so glad you are joining us this... It's not a fine evening, Art. What's happened to our weather?
It's January.
You know, I'm feeling very stressed and very guilty right now.
Because?
I was in Calgary last week.
Oh.
Yeah. I had some speaking engagements Monday and Tuesday in Calgary, and they went off very well.
Of course they did.
But before that, my partner Shannon, she had a friend that was having a wedding. She was getting married. So we went out on Saturday for the wedding. We're driving around on Sunday. Shannon used to live there, so we're looking at some of the neighborhoods she used to live in. And we're driving by the river, and I said this. I have to come clean. I said, you know, Calgary is so different than Winnipeg because the Bow River almost never floods.
And then just like you're some sort of time traveler or fortune teller or misfortune teller.
What a tragedy. We don't think in Canada that something's going to happen that will alter a community's future for all time.
Like long-term future.
Yeah, because, I mean, people had their houses in places like High River. They didn't just have their house destroyed by the flood. Their land was washed away. They don't have a lot anymore. They don't have, even if they could rebuild, they don't have land to rebuild on.
I've got some family. I've got a good friend of mine who, I mean, everyone uses Facebook now. I don't read the papers because it doesn't mean a lot necessarily. So you can have people from Calgary who are taking pictures and videos and seeing it right in front of your face. And a good friend of mine, he's got his parents. He said that their house washed away and he's got nothing. Their family, his parents have nothing now. And
that's in the retired people, like High Rivers, those sorts of communities, and Canmore had a lot of people that are retiring, settling in. They don't have an opportunity to go back and go into the workforce and earn money again. And the insurance companies came right out and said, oh, you know, we're not responsible for this. We're not going to pay.
Yeah, I don't understand. No flood insurance apparently in Canada.
Well, you do have flood insurance, but it's flooding that comes through the sewer system, like sewers backing up into your house and that sort of stuff, that as soon as the water starts coming in through doorways and windows, they say that's force majeure. That's an act of God, and they aren't responsible.
Well, another comic friend of mine, the plan is we're going to put together a fundraiser, a comedy, improv, some live music. It just got confirmed yesterday, and it's going to be at the Rio Theater on Saturday, July 13th.
Oh.
So we've got a couple of weeks, but we really need to get the word out.
Well, I should come and do some technology comedy for you. What do you say?
You're in. We need all the help we can.
I'm feeling a little bit responsible. Yeah.
Well, you should do something. At the very least, buy a ticket.
Well, it's, you know, and I don't mean to make light of it at all. It was just, you know, the place that I spoke at a CGA conference, and we were on the Stampede Grounds at the BMO Center.
Which is now underwater.
Yeah. Well, they didn't finish the conference. The conference was a full week. They couldn't finish. So, yeah, it was just, I literally got out just as the waters were coming up, I guess. I flew out on Tuesday evening. And I spoke on Monday night, and there was, like, tornado warnings all over.
You don't think of Calgary as necessarily a wet plain.
No, it's not. It's not the same kind of a floodplain, no, because the Bow is, it's just the weather system that must have dumped all that. Anyways, it's tragic. Tragic what happened.
Do what you can.
And our heart does, I know we have lots of listeners and lots of people who follow us there in
across Canada.
In our hearts are certainly out to the folks in Calgary. We do have a great show lined up. Let's get back onto the technology thing today. We do have a great show today lined up. We've got to, do you use LinkedIn? Are you using LinkedIn for business?
Yes, I do. I'm very surprised when people actually want my LinkedIn endorsement.
LinkedIn is a powerful, powerful business networking tool. Very different than Facebook. And we have Canada's number one LinkedIn expert on how to use it and how to use it for building your brand and building your business. Melanie Dodaro is going to be joining us today, and so she is a wealth of knowledge. We will be picking her brain and learning a lot about LinkedIn. And then a little bit later in the show, Julian Saunders is going to join us, and he is going to be talking about virtual private networks. I know it sounds boring, but what it means to you and I is getting Netflix, getting American, getting British Netflix on our devices with our Canadian subscription, which is a good thing. I think we'll just take a quick break, and we'll come back with Melanie.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better.
Website at dottotech.com
and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now, comfortably ensconced in her home in Kelowna, is Melanie Dodaro. Now, Melanie is the founder of Top Dog Social Media, and she has been acclaimed as Canada's number one LinkedIn expert. So I just had to pick her brain. So Melanie, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, LinkedIn. You know, it's interesting how you've taken on LinkedIn as your specialty when so much of the social media world flocks towards Facebook with the huge number of the huge number of people that are using it. But LinkedIn is when somebody asks you, when you're at that wedding and you're talking to people and they say, what do? I teach people and I talk about LinkedIn. How do you describe LinkedIn to the neophyte?
Well, you know, I love what you were just saying about, you know, how most people flock to Facebook, and what people don't realize that, you know, are spending a lot of time on social media is that LinkedIn is far more effective for, you know, business than Facebook or Twitter, because, you know, speaking about business is common practice. Now, if you're on Facebook and you're on your personal profile, for example, and you start talking about your business all the time, people just completely tune you out.
There can be, you can almost be seen as a bit of a pariah if you start talking business on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll block you, they'll unfriend you, and it's just not socially acceptable there. And Facebook, you know, I'm a big fan of it in terms of what it was built for, which was a personal social network to interact and engage with your friends and family. It does a wonderful job of that. But many businesses failed very miserably at utilizing it as a business building tool. And I think one of the biggest challenges there is because of, you know, all the restrictions that Facebook puts on business pages. So, of course, it's appropriate and it's okay to speak about business on your business Facebook page. But the problem is that Facebook doesn't show it in people's news feeds. So, you know, unless you're going to be paying for ads all the time, most people are never going to see your message. And it's really hard to gain leverage there in terms of, you know, getting people to go to your Facebook page, like it, come back, have Facebook show it in your newsfeed. And that's what made me really gravitate towards LinkedIn. I think, you know, one of the biggest reasons that I love LinkedIn is that I always say I'm a business owner, I'm an entrepreneur first and foremost, social media second. And that's because, you know, that's my background. And so when I found LinkedIn and realized that this is just, you know, a total business network, people aren't talking about what they ate for lunch, they're not sharing pictures of their dinner, it's all business. And for me personally, I like that. If you're looking at using it as a tool for fun, it's not as much fun as Facebook, clearly. But if you're looking at using it as a business building tool, you'll get a lot better results.
And that, it's all expectations. It's acceptable to ask people for meetings, to inquire with them on LinkedIn, that, and those sorts of inquiries might be taken amiss in the other social medias.
Right, absolutely.
So there is a bit of a, as all early adopters tend to, all of the social networks seem to kind of form a lot of their kind of personality based on the early adopters. Facebook, of course, was originally built around the university network of university kids connecting. LinkedIn seemed to me the first real heavy-duty adopters of Facebook were those who were looking for jobs and those who were looking to hire people for jobs. Am I mistaken?
No, I think that that's pretty accurate. I mean, I think that, you know, originally that was kind of, you know, where LinkedIn maybe started off and had their recruiter programs and whatnot. And people kind of perceived LinkedIn as a place to post your online resume or your professional bio. And that's really evolved a lot. And I think it's a big misconception now when people think that, you know, LinkedIn is a place to post your resume or it's a place to look for jobs or a place for recruiters to find employees, where the vast majority of what happens on LinkedIn, you know, 80% of the people that are using LinkedIn are business decision makers. They're either business owners or decision makers. So there's a tremendous opportunity to find your ideal clients on LinkedIn. And the key is to not treat it like a resume site if you are looking to use it as a business building tool. So when I'm working with a client, you know, once in a while I'll help clients who are higher end job seekers that are looking for, you know, maybe C-suite or higher executive level jobs that will hire me to do their LinkedIn profile for them. I do their profile completely different than I would for the business owner or the entrepreneur or the professional that's hiring me to write their LinkedIn profile. Those two profiles look completely different.
That's interesting. I mean, I can remember about a year and a bit ago, we talked LinkedIn and we were talking about the new job market. And one of the things that the guest at that point advised was that you always keep your resume up to date on LinkedIn because it's a permanent resume. And so that if you ever are laid off or downsized, you shouldn't be spending the next week writing your resume. You should be just starting to share your LinkedIn profile in that way. But you're really talking about it from a little bit of a different perspective, aren't you?
I absolutely am. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I say with, you know, with people that are using it as a business building tool is, you know, people don't care about you. They don't care about what you can do for them. So your profile really needs to reflect that. And it's almost counterintuitive to what we believe LinkedIn is. So when I'm, you know, writing my own LinkedIn profile or one of my clients' LinkedIn profiles, one of the things that I'm looking at is like, who is your target market? Who's your ideal client? You know, what are the problems that they face? What are the solutions that you provide? And the vast majority of their profiles, specifically their summary section, which is really the first thing that somebody reads once they've landed on your profile, should really speak to who your ideal client is. Because my goal is for when somebody lands on your profile, for them to be able to immediately self-select and say, ah, that Steve guy, I need to talk to him. He's got what I need. He knows, you know, he's talking to me in his profile. And make sure that it really speaks to them versus speaks all about you. Now, you do need to have a little bit of information about you. So I always say, you know, start off with your credibility paragraph. You know, tell people who you are, what you do, why you do it, and what makes you special. And then move right into talking about who your ideal clients are and how you help them.
Okay. Now, I'm visiting your profile as I'm doing this. And the one thing I notice, and the one thing that so many people, they have the question over and over again, is you are, obviously, since you specialize in it, you're a LinkedIn premium member. You spend the dollars on LinkedIn. Who is that for? Where is the breaking point? You know, at what threshold do you have to cross to be willing to spend that? Because it's not cheap. As far as all of the different social networks are concerned, it's quite expensive.
Well, I wouldn't say it's quite expensive. You know,
oh, you don't have my budget.
It's, you know, a premium account's about $250 a year, and then there's higher levels that you can go up. Mm. Now, it's great for people who are using it really actively. So it's wonderful for salespeople. I do a lot of sales training for, you know, companies, corporations that have sales teams, and teach their sales teams how to use LinkedIn as a lead generation tool to warm up people before they try to pick up the call or the phone and do the cold calls. So it's great for that. It's great for business owners that have a very specific target market that they're aware of, that they can really start to reach out and connect with those people. So the premium accounts allow you to have much greater advanced search, allow you to also track and see everybody who's viewed your profile, the keywords in which people are finding you for. There used to actually be more benefits to a LinkedIn profile account, a LinkedIn premium account, until recently. And LinkedIn's recently made some changes. This isn't in effect with everybody's profiles yet, but they've recently launched something called LinkedIn Contacts. And it is beyond fabulous. I love it. And I'm absolutely blown away that they launched this in the free accounts. So just because they've launched it in the free accounts doesn't mean that it's necessarily always going to stay free, because I really don't. I think that, you know, it was not a wise business move on their part to allow this to be part of the free service, because it's just so robust and it's so amazing that people would absolutely pay for it. So we'll see what happens with that over the next couple months, because they're still in beta for it. But it's amazing because it's really incorporated the CRM, so you can you know, for example, if I'm teaching people how to create a LinkedIn campaign to, you know, attract more ideal clients, find people to connect with on LinkedIn, one of the things that I'll tell them, you know, set up folders and tag people in specific categories so it's easy to go back to, record notes and do all these things. And so it was a little bit challenging in the past. You'd have to go back and you'd have to go and you know, dig up the notes and figure out what you did with this, these people. And now, and again, this isn't rolled out to everybody yet, but now when you're, you know, landing on someone's profile, and I'm looking at yours right now, if you and I have had any kind of interaction, like we had, you know, sent a message back or forth, it would be there. I'd be able to see all of our communications. It would also, it also provides reminders to say, hey, follow up with this person in a week or a month. So it's phenomenal. I'm just, actually, I'm having a, I'm going to have a blog post published this week about it. It's just amazing.
Now, so I've just actually, I just searched it while we were talking, and I was able to actually, I guess I'm, my account is qualified, because is it not rolled out to everybody yet? Is it something you have to sign up for, or is it available to everybody at this point?
Yeah, it's available to everybody. You can request to.
Okay.
But it hasn't been rolled out to everybody yet. So
got it. So I just requested it. Now it's processing a whole bunch of stuff. It looks like it's going through. Now, does this, and you have to excuse me because I have done no research at all on this, but it, how different is this going to keep me up to date on, is this similar to an address book that has some CRM capabilities built into it? Like, does this replace for me my Outlook contacts or my Google contacts, or is it a totally uniquely LinkedIn thing?
Well, you know, that depends on how you want to use it. I personally wouldn't use it like that. I kind of like to keep my stuff separate.
Okay.
But, you know, within your LinkedIn contacts, and as you grow them over time, and if you're using LinkedIn as a, you know, like I said, as a business building tool, and you're reaching out and connecting with a lot of people, it's really hard to remember what's happened.
Okay. So it's giving you all the context of your communications, of all your emails going back and forth.
Yeah, and also triggering opportunities for you know, reminders to follow up. Let's say you contact somebody today and they're like, well, let's connect next week or next month, or you know, you can set reminders in there. So there's some really amazing tools that are available through that function.
So they're trying to funnel as much communications, much interpersonal communication through their InMail and through their LinkedIn interface then. That'll be kind of one of the goals of LinkedIn in using this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're just making the system a lot more robust. They've been, I've never seen LinkedIn make as many changes as they have over the course of the last year. And I have to say, for the most part, I'd say 95% of their changes have been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few things that we're hoping maybe come back in the future, but you know, they're always testing new things. They've been innovating amazingly over the last year.
Okay, let's. So we've talked a little bit about the premium account and what's worth it, and you've certainly waxed eloquently about their new contact system. What are some of the mistakes that you see? Most common mistakes that you see people doing in LinkedIn?
The biggest mistake that I see people making is reaching out, trying to grow their network, and never personalizing anything. So, you know, they'll send off connection request messages to people they don't know that might be, you know, part of their target market, or you know, an ideal prospect, and they just use LinkedIn's default messages. And I'm a big advocate of never using LinkedIn's default messages for anything ever.
Mm.
Personalize everything. Now, if it's your brother or your best friend that you're sending a LinkedIn connection to, no big deal. But if you're trying to use it to connect with a new person that you don't know, or that you know, that you've recently met, and they might not 100% remember you, always make sure that you're, you know, adding a personal connection request. Tell people why you want to connect with them versus just, you know, just the default message. So, for example, one of the, you know, the messages that I'll often use, a great place to find people to connect with is groups. So LinkedIn allows you to join 50 groups. And I have a formula that I always suggest people utilize when they're thinking about what those groups should be. Biggest mistake I see when people are choosing their groups is that they choose all their industry-specific groups. So, for example, if they're a realtor, they choose all the real estate groups. And if they're a financial advisor, they choose all the financial advisor groups or whatever. And so the idea is, when you want to choose the vast majority of your groups that are focused on where your target market is. So it is important to stay up to date on your industry, and you do want to watch what your peers and maybe even your competitors are doing. So join, you know, maybe 3 to 5 industry-specific groups so that you can stay up to date on your own industry. Then join maybe 3 to 5 groups that are on things that you want to learn more about. For example, I've got a group called Social Media Marketing in Canada. So anybody who's interested in learning more about social media, they might be interested in joining that group so that they can stay up to date and get new tips, or they might want marketing tips, or they might want tax tips, or whatever it is that's important to them. They might want to join some groups that are specific to have them, you know, learn some new stuff. The vast majority of the groups, so 40 plus, should be where your ideal clients are. And these are the groups where you want to engage, you know, add value to conversations and reach out to the members of those groups, because the members of those groups ideally are your ideal target market.
Okay.
So when you do that, a great way of doing that is to say, hey, you know, Steve, I noticed that we're both members of, you know, BC Business Group.
Yeah.
I love to connect with like-minded people or other people within the business community in Vancouver, and would love to connect with you.
That's interesting, because I often just go through that. I wonder how many people do that. Is they check their LinkedIn because they're accepting any invitations that have come that way. And then LinkedIn does a nice job of proselytizing. They say, hey, you should also be friends with, or connections with, I don't think they call it friends, I'm sorry, I'm using the Facebook vernacular, but you should also connect with these people, or you might know these people. And then I typically look through the first page there and see people that I used to work with at this TV studio or in this job. And I just usually click connect, just because, oh, it's nice to see them, and just think it'd be nice to have them there in case. So that, and I think a lot of people do it that way, but really I'm not doing an awful lot as far as engagement by doing that.
Okay, so one of the things that's really important to do, and I do this with every single person that connects with me, however, you just connected with me right now, and I didn't do this with you.
I did it so wrong, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. But I wanted to have first level view of your profile. So I just went ahead and clicked your connection request and accepted it. But normally what I do is I send people a welcome message and I say, hey, you know, thanks so much for reaching out and connecting with me here on LinkedIn, you know, blah, blah. And then I offer them a couple of free gifts. I'm like, hey, you know, obviously you're here on LinkedIn and you probably want to make the most of your profile. Here's a link to a handy checklist where it gives you the 21 most important things that you need to know about your LinkedIn profile. Go to LinkedInChecklist.com and download it now. And, you know, it's a handy resource to have with you. So I offer them something that's of value to them that's mm-hmm. going to help them.
You're so smart.
And so now I've you know, started, instead of just accepting that connection request, I've started to build a relationship with them. Not to mention now they're in my email list. And I can send them ongoing, you know, valuable content, whether it's, you know, new articles or whatever that I publish. And I remain top of mind.
Yes.
So, you know, should one day come along where they're needing some help with social media, whether they're maybe needing, you know, a social media strategic plan done, or they're needing help with their LinkedIn profile, or they're need, you know, wanting social media management for their company, or whatever it is that we offer. We also offer online courses, any of those things that they're thinking about. Mm-hmm. I become their first person that comes to mind because I've remained top of mind with them.
That's a nugget there. I like that idea. Listen, Mel, could you stick around for a few minutes? We're hard on a break, but can you stick around for and I have a few other questions I want to ask you after the break. Will that work?
Of course.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm online with Melanie Dodaro. She is Canada's number one LinkedIn expert, and you are tuned in to Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better.
Do you have
better.
A comment Except or a question for Dottotech?
Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
We are continuing our conversation with Melanie Dodaro. She is Canada's number one expert on LinkedIn. Now, I read the headline and she said she was Canada's number one LinkedIn expert. If you listen to our first segment, you know she probably is. She seems to have a real handle on what's happening on LinkedIn. Melanie, I've got to ask you, it's driving me crazy. I've got probably too many LinkedIn connections because I show absolutely no have in the past. Shown, I just have had no filters. Anybody that wanted to be my friend on LinkedIn, yeah, sure. I figured it was good because I'm in radio and TV and stuff like that. I was figured it would be good that I could just link to everybody so they would see my status updates because what I say is so darned important. But having all these people who I marginally know or really don't know as LinkedIn connections, I'm getting them all endorsing me for a bunch of things that they really don't know if I know about or not. What's the story with this endorsement thing that's going on?
Oh, that's a great question. Let me just, before I answer that, talk about the reason why, Steve, that it's good to grow your network. So you were saying that you just widely accept everybody's connection.
I'm so accepting.
Yeah. And so, okay. So, a lot of people will say to me, Melanie, should I accept all these connection requests? All these people are connecting with me and I don't know them. And so it's important to understand that LinkedIn is very different from Facebook. Facebook is your personal social network, and I completely understand why you might want to reserve that to friends and family only. LinkedIn is your professional network, and it's okay to open it only if you're interested in more business. If you're not interested in any more business, then you might want to keep it closed and be very selective about who you allow in. But here's the benefits of growing your network. The more people that you're connected to, the larger your second and third level connections become. Now, when somebody is doing a search on LinkedIn, if they're looking for exactly what you do, for example, in your case, Steve, if they're looking for a keynote speaker in Vancouver and you're not in their first, second, or third level connections, or you're a member of the same group, you don't even show up in the search results.
Oh no, that's a travesty.
Which means that every single day there are people doing searches on LinkedIn looking for exactly what you offer, and you're not showing up. So that's why it's important to grow your network. Now, having said that, I do go through every single connection request now. I make sure that, if they don't have a profile picture, I click on their profile to see, does this look like a legit person? Could it be a spammer? Because there are some people that abuse systems and create fake accounts and do some shady things. So I make sure they're legit, and I've started to, hold back on, some of the overseas people that I connect with simply because, there's certain areas where there's a lot more spam and problems coming out of it than others. So, I'll watch for that. And there might just be somebody I don't, want to connect with for whatever personal reason. And some people will say, well, should I connect with my competitors? Well, here's what you have to look at. Is every time you connect with somebody, it's a win-win situation. It expands your network and it expands theirs. So unless there's a legitimate reason that you have for not wanting to connect with somebody, then connect with most people.
You know, the strategist in me says, okay, if my competitor is smaller than me as far as their LinkedIn connections, I'm not connecting with them, only if they're bigger. I'm not sure that's a healthy attitude, but that was my immediate thought.
Well, it's interesting because, some industries are much more competitive than others. For me, I connect with everybody in the social media industry. The social media industry is a very unique industry. I mean, most of the people in social media out there are promoting me.
Yes.
They promote my stuff all the time. Most people in social media don't know a lot about LinkedIn, so I get a lot of referrals from social media people. They all share my content on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And so it's a very collaborative, very giving industry for the most part. It's very different than most industries. So I understand, having been in business for a long time, that not every industry is like that. It kind of blows me away sometimes to think that it's like this in the social media industry. Mm-hmm. But, there's reasons for sure that you might not want to connect with competitors, especially. But here's the thing, one of the things I'll say to people is they're like, well, what if they start trying to poach my clients? I'm like, first of all, if they do, they're going to do it in a totally unethical way. They're going to be, they're going to be breaking all the etiquette rules. They're going to just end up turning people off and making themselves look bad. So I wouldn't worry about it,
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right there. And I was kind of being a little bit facetious when I was saying that I would look and see the size. But you lead me into the next question, which is, what is the story with these endorsements that have started happening? Is it about 6 months that we've had them on LinkedIn?
I think it's been a little bit longer than that. But yeah. Let's go into the endorsements. First of all, you set up your skills section in LinkedIn and you choose the skills that you want to have in there. And then people will endorse you. But sometimes people will endorse you for skills that you don't have in there and that you don't want to be endorsed for. So, for example, you're only allowed to have 50 skills. Mm-hmm. And I can every single day get hundreds of people endorsing me for skills that I don't have on my profile. And if I accept those ones, then I have to remove others. And I'm like, why are people endorsing me for skills that I don't necessarily have or want on my profile. Why can't they just endorse me for the ones I have on my profile? Which they do. I have probably tens of thousands of endorsements. But the endorsement thing is interesting because it's this little one-click wonder, right? You just click a button, so it doesn't really mean much. There's no real meat to it. There's no real, you know, it's not that that person's really gone out of their way to do anything. So they don't mean nearly as much as a recommendation. But here's what makes this interesting. Is there's something called social proof. And for those of you that don't know what social proof is, basically social proof is our human nature that dictates when in doubt, we will do what other people do. So when we're not sure about a decision, we'll look to what other people do. And this is why businesses use testimonials and celebrity endorsements and all these different things, because we look at the results of others and we're like, oh, okay, well, if they're endorsing them, then they must be good. So there's this element of social proof for the endorsements with all those little pictures and the numbers next to it that people are like, wow, this person must be good. Look at all the endorsements they have. You know, and I know that that's not true because they're so easy to get. But there's still the psychological issue of social proof that makes it look good.
Why do people do it so much? I mean, I guess, does it happen when somebody's endorsed them and they just feel that a quid pro quo is necessary? Because right now, it's actually encouraging me because I'm looking at your profile and it's asking me to endorse you for all of these things right now. Is LinkedIn because it's just such low-hanging fruit and so easy to do and I think that you'll appreciate it?
Yes. So there's a couple reasons that people do it. That reason is exactly it. LinkedIn makes it very easy to do. And people think, oh, this would be nice. Then there's also another psychological effect that comes into play, which is the law of reciprocity. Mm. So if you're looking for endorsements, one of the best ways to get them is to give them.
It's kind of like the Twitter thing of the people who follow lots of people on Twitter get lots of followers.
The people that retweet get other people retweeting. So I have lists on Twitter. So if you are continuously retweeting me, you get on a list that I have on Twitter that's people that retweet. And what I do every single day is I go into my list of these people that are regularly retweeting me. And I'm like, do any of these people have any good content today for me to share? Because I want to reciprocate.
Yes. Okay.
Right. So, you know, the law of reciprocity comes into play and, you know, people, you know, for the endorsements, that's fine. For recommendations, total another story. I tell people never, ever, ever recommend somebody that you don't know.
Actual written recommendation that we have they take time, they write, and it's based on some personal experience with you.
Exactly, exactly. And I have people every single day send me the LinkedIn default message saying, will you please recommend me? And I'm like, I don't even respond. I'm like, I don't even know this person. And I wrote an article a while back about, you know, four things you need to do if you're wanting LinkedIn recommendations, something like that. First thing I said is never ask somebody you don't know for a LinkedIn recommendation. So for a while, when people were sending me LinkedIn connection requests, I would just send them a link to that article. I'd be like, hey, you know what? If you'd like to get more recommendations on LinkedIn, you might want to read this article. And then they send me an email back apologizing, saying, oh, I'm sorry, you know, for asking you for a LinkedIn recommendation when, you know, I don't even know you. And I'm like, well, how do you give somebody a LinkedIn recommendation when you don't know them? Now, I get a lot on a regular basis from people that I don't know, but they know me because they've listened to my webinars or they've listened to me on an interview. Or they've read my blog post and I provided true value to them. And they're giving me a recommendation based on that experience.
Yes. And that's a totally different story.
Yeah.
And you don't feel a burden of reciprocity in that particular case, do you?
And no, and I would never reciprocate because I don't know them. I can't.
Yes. And that's the way I kind of feel. You know, I've felt kind of guilty even about the endorsements because I just never have endorsed. I've hardly endorsed anybody. I've done like three. And I just feel, well, does somebody out there know? And am I suddenly going to become an ungrateful cad because of it? But apparently not.
No, I mean, I just personally wouldn't worry about that at all.
Good. You've alleviated some of my guilt.
absolutely.
But I am happy to hear about the endorsement side, because that, or not the the recommendation side, because that to me, when I do look at recommendations, if I am looking at somebody's profile, I do scroll down and see who's recommending them, and look for kind of quality individuals in that space. And it does give you a much better feel for the people that you're talking about business-wise, because you're getting an actual recommendation that somebody I know has had to take a half an hour of their time to craft.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, here's the thing. If somebody's looking for, let's say, you know, some kind of a service provider, whether it's a, you know, a coach or a consultant or an accountant or a lawyer or anything like that on LinkedIn, they're doing a search for that. And on page one of LinkedIn, they see, you know, however many shows up, 8, 10. And let's say they're looking at the first 3 or 5 and they see, you know, number one on the top has, you know, 2 LinkedIn recommendations. The guy below that has, you know, 4. The woman below that has 0. And the one below that, number 4 position, has like 18. We're much more likely to click on that one with 18 because we're intrigued by that. We're like, wow, they've got a lot more recommendations than the other people. Let me check them out. So recommendations are really important. And so I will give you a few tips on what to do if you want to get LinkedIn recommendations. Of course, tip number one is never ask someone you don't know. I've already covered that. The next thing is tell people why. You know, always give people a reason why. So for example, you know, I'm just starting to spend more time on my LinkedIn profile and thought it would probably be a really good idea for me to get some recommendations to really kind of boost my profile. I was hoping you'd be willing to provide a written recommendation for me. Then also, you know, offer to reciprocate if it's somebody that you can, because the circumstance, obviously you're asking somebody, you know them. And then say, you know, I'd be happy to reciprocate if you would like one too. Now, this next step is the step that nobody does, and it involves a lot more work on your part, but it's almost going to guarantee you a recommendation 90 plus, maybe close to 99% of the time, versus probably 10% of the time if you just randomly send it out. Because here's the thing, you send a recommendation request to somebody and people are busy. They don't might not even know how to do it or what to write. A lot of times they don't know what to write. Or they're not a good writer. Or they're like, yeah, you know what? I really like that person. I will send them a connection. I will send them a LinkedIn recommendation, but I'm going to just put that aside for now and I'll get to it later. And they never do.
Yes.
So you want to make this super easy for people. And so what you want to do is say, hey, you know what I've done is I've gone ahead and created a sample recommendation.
Yes, I thought you were going to say it's like the theater publicist writing the review for the reviewer who doesn't go to the show.
Right. So,
it's more legit, but it's that idea. It's offloading some of the work.
Right. Exactly. But what you want to say next is, you know, please feel free to make this your own. You want them to make it their own, right? You want to create something that's relevant to their experience with you, but ask them to make it their own. And then now they know what to write. Now they can go in and make some edits to it and they can tweak it or they can see that as an example and they're like, okay, now I can figure out what to write.
And then strategically, you've got the highlights that you want in that recommendation embedded in it.
Right, absolutely.
Very good. Yeah. Now, I have one other area. We've already kept you probably over time, but that's too bad for you. the people who have viewed you, that's the one thing that whenever I go to my LinkedIn account, whenever I go in to accept requests, the first thing I do is I'm always curious about who's been looking at me. Is that normal or is my ego completely out of check?
No, everybody does that. And that's one of the advantages to upgrading to a premium account is instead of seeing just the last 5 people who viewed your profile, you can see every single person who's viewed your profile.
Now, I feel a little bit weird about visiting people's profiles because of that, because I don't want them knowing that I'm looking at their profiles. Is that
well, you know what, there's nothing wrong with other people looking at other people's profiles. There's nothing wrong with it at all. In fact, a lot of times by you looking at a profile, it gets you on the radar of that person.
But I don't want to be on the radar of some people. I might be looking for a guest for the show, so I read through like 5 or 6 profiles looking for somebody who I want to reach out to. There's those 4 or 5 people, though, that I don't want to reach out to, that I don't want to hear from again because they didn't pass muster. So that's my fear.
Well, you know what, though? You might be open to a connection request with them.
Yeah, I probably would be. And do you do that? Do people do that? If I've never seen somebody, because I feel it would almost be, I don't know, it's funny the social... just the not understanding the social format, the social propriety. So I see somebody's looked at me, but I don't want to point out to them, hey, you were looking at me. Do you want to be my friend? I mean, I feel, kind of feel like in the schoolyard, like, you know, the kid that looks like, you looked at me, now what?
So, right, yeah. I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about it at all.
You realize now that I have serious psychological issues, I'm sure.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I mean, you know, sometimes you might want to be checking out your competitor's profile or
yeah.
Or, okay, so here's a little trick.
Okay.
You can Google people from your phone, for example, uh-huh. where you're not logged into LinkedIn. And you can check people out.
Oh, so if you're not logged into LinkedIn, I mean, you're checking them out from just a normal search, you'll see the LinkedIn link come up.
Right.
And so you won't be identified.
Right.
See, that seems far more appealing to me. So is that now, does the person's LinkedIn profile tell them that somebody unknown looked at them?
You know, I'm not even sure exactly how it works from a cell phone. I just know that if you're not logged in, it can't register your information. So I'm not sure that it even shows up at all.
Got it. But let's go. Let's just take
it. It wouldn't show up at all because they're not logged into LinkedIn.
Got it. Okay. So it's just so I'm looking at now people who have viewed my profile, and I see the, as you say, the last. Oh, and there you are. So there's nothing wrong with me seeing these people and saying, oh, this is a person that might be interested in connecting with, and just clicking on connect at this point.
No, don't click on connect. Click on their name.
Oh, that's right. Do a little bit of research on them first.
Click on their name, and then send a proper connection request that you.
I forgot. I have that in my notes up higher. I'll have to refresh my notes before I do that.
But if you do, you know, if you know that it's somebody that you want to connect with, you could just click connect, but make sure you personalize the message.
Personalize the message as well. And that will grow your network as well. And it makes you nice and polite because they're kind of visiting your house by looking at my profile, I think. Your profile is huge. The last question I'm going to ask you is there a point where it becomes too much? Like, I'm thinking, I was looking through it, and it took me a long time to scroll down to the bottom, to the meat, which was your recommendations. There was a lot about you in the top, which is good, and what you do. I get that. But getting down to that, those kind of things that finally entrench you for me, those recommendations, there was a fair bit of scrolling on your profile.
Yeah. Well, you know, most people don't go much beyond, you know, the first or second experience. Mm-hmm. So the most important parts of your LinkedIn profile are your headline, your summary, and your current work experience. That's the stuff that people are going to check out. Most people won't, unless they're very interested in you and you've really got their attention, they're not going to scroll much beyond that.
Okay. Good. Actually, it's interesting. I just went back to your profile and now the LinkedIn contacts has kicked in and mm-hmm. there's a tab in your profile asking me to check it out with you as far as my communications with you. So it's already starting to work.
Awesome.
Interesting. Melanie, there is so much. I could keep you on for the rest of the show, but we have other guests. So I'm going to have to call it a day now, and I'm sure you have other things to take care of, like eating or something like that. So I have to ask you, though, about Top Dog Social Media, which is your company, and you provide courses and training on all this sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, we have some online courses for people who are, you know, just wanting to get some more education on how to do this the right way. And how to use it as a true business building tool. Then we also offer custom training for organizations, and we do social media management for some companies. We do LinkedIn profiles, professional LinkedIn profiles that for people who are really serious about using LinkedIn. So we offer a number of different services at Top Dog Social Media.
And so you find them at topdogsocialmedia.com.
Yes.
Melanie, and your Twitter ID is Melanie Dodaro, right?
Yes. If you go to topdogsocialmedia.com, all my social media links are there, so it'll be easier just to click from there and find them.
And you are very active on Twitter as well. That seems to be a network that you are communicating on a regular basis on.
I am a big fan of Twitter also for business, yeah.
We'll include that in our conversation next time.
Okay, sounds good.
Melanie Dodaro of Top Dog Social Media, Canada's number one expert on LinkedIn, and now we all know a little bit more. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Do you know a comment or a question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, is Julian Saunders. How are you doing, Julian?
I'm doing awesome. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. I hear with all the flooding, we're going to have less Saskatoon berries, though. Can it be true?
Yeah, you never know. There might be a shortage. You might want to pick up some Saskatoon berry jam just in case.
Not so big on the jam. Like the syrup.
Well, you know, not a bad time to stock up. It's always better to be prepared.
Yes, indeed. Well, of all of the things that the flooding is causing, the Saskatoon berry bushes. But mind you, they're hardy bushes. It's just a one-year thing. They'll be back next year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And there's other parts of the province with no flooding that'll still have some. So
now,
it won't be as bad as you think.
Yeah, well, okay. Let's talk. Yes, tune into DottoTech for the Saskatoon berry crop report. let's talk about, I sent you an email saying, now, what are we going to talk about this week? And you got all excited, Surf Easy, Surf Easy. And I said, we just talked about Surf Easy. It's that little USB key that we can stick in that creates a virtual private network for us, right?
Right, yeah, and it's a great way to hide where you are. You can unblock services that are gated for America only, and Surf Easy has just launched a Surf Easy for mobile and for computer.
Okay, so in this case here, the VPN is basically, it's IP masking is what it's doing, as opposed to helping us tunnel into our own corporate server, am I right?
Right, yeah. So the idea is that you you subscribe to the Surf Easy private network, and you install it on your Android device. It's compatible with iPhone, iPad, Mac, and PC. And then it takes your whole connection to the internet, and it puts it makes it look like it's coming from somewhere else. And it's a very good way for security to keep your information very controlled. It's kind of funny. I've been playing around with it, and even Google ad tracking wasn't working. My Chrome browser on my iPhone that I was playing with, it kept asking me to put in a security passphrase because my location kept changing too quickly, and I left no footprint with Google at all, even. So for the tinfoil hat types, it's the ultimate for speed.
Is that how you talk about your customers, Julian? For all you tinfoil hat types, come on out and buy a virtual private network from us.
I actually stole that line from Cedric. He's our he's one of the biggest tinfoil hat wearers I know.
Yeah,
and
he does actually wear one. He has it in his office. I saw it the other day. So a couple things. First of all, now there is a benefit to this, obviously, which we'll talk about. But the negative side is, I know a lot of people complain about the privacy, but if you're thinking about when you're logging on, the ads that you're getting served to you are based on your location. So if you happen to the odd time in a Google ad see a concert that's in your area or a workshop or a special being offered by a retailer that you like to deal with, that's because they know where you are. And those ads are going to go away. They won't have that information about you. So you'll be getting much more generic ads. So you'll be getting a lot more of the old school Google ads that you used to get.
Well, and there is a little there is a little trick that the Surf Easy VPN pulls. So things like maps, like on Google Maps for iOS, and even for Google Maps on my computer, it releases just enough information based on your physical address to make your location aware for those purposes. So
okay.
It doesn't hide your complete location. It only hides your digital footprint, basically.
Got it. Okay. Now, does it slow down the internet at all for your use?
It doesn't. That was actually my biggest concern when I started testing it, was that my connection would be slow. And because it's a paid network, it's not one of the free solutions that gets overloaded. They have very large servers that make sure it doesn't slow down.
Okay, that's good. Now, on the bonus side, other than, you know, serving the tinfoil hat community, there's some real practical applications to being able to mask your IP, and mostly in logging on services. So you can now get services if you use this that you wouldn't be able to get before.
That's right, yeah. Things like Netflix, it makes your whole device make it look like it's in the U.S. So if you're a Netflix Canada subscriber, you just turn on the VPN that you buy from Surf Easy, and you have American Netflix.
And that will also extend to allowing you to log on to American network television sites and view their streaming content, and probably even things like Pandora.
Absolutely, yeah. It works for any of them because you can also change it to the U.K., So you can get content from there too. That one's actually got a lot more block content from things like the BBC that can have some great applications when you're in school, because they've got a huge educational network that you can tap in. There's no bandwidth limit on you. There's no data cap on the SurfEasy. So you can do an unlimited amount of streaming video or whatever you're doing. There's no bandwidth limit on you either.
And the I had a great question about that. I know what it is. It should be pointed out that this is not attached to your subscription to things like Netflix. So if you are viewing your Netflix on an Apple TV or on one of the other boxes, it doesn't solve that problem. If you do that, you have to set that up at your own router, right?
That's right. Yeah, that wouldn't be a SurfEasy solution. It just works for your computer. So if you plug your tablet or your computer into your TV, then it works.
Yeah, but a lot of us use Netflix on our tablet, so that would be a great solution for that.
Right. Yeah, and you could use the Apple TV as a second screen, so you could use the Play To feature from a computer, from a Mac or an iPhone or iPad to mirror the screen from your device that has the American Netflix on it. And then your iPad's tied up while you're doing it, but it works beautifully.
Okay. And the cost?
It's $49.99 a year, and that's for up to 5 devices.
So your iPhone, iPad, and yep. a couple of notebooks and a desktop computer. You're laughing.
Right. You got it. Yeah. And it works with Windows XP and higher and Mac OS, OS X 10.6 and higher.
Okay. And it's a one-year subscription, and it's a piece of software you install.
Right, yeah, and it sets up an account on SurfEasy, so it's all cloud-based.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you can freely change your 5 devices whenever you want. So if you set up an iPad now and then you replace that with a different iPad 6 months from now, you can still just change it to that new device.
Excellent. Julian Saunders is computer manager in the Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, London Drugs, and he is a regular here on Dotto Tech. Thanks for your help, Julian.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
Art, I do believe that in the number of gems and nuggets per minute, this might be a record-setting show here on Dotto Tech. Melanie knows her LinkedIn stuff.
I'll have to go through the records, but for now, let's put a pencil in it. Yes, gold and gems, this could be the best.
I can't believe how many things I was doing wrong on LinkedIn. I thought I was doing it all right, and I'm almost everything wrong. I have to completely reevaluate my LinkedIn strategy, as do you, sir.
Well, I think the trick is don't treat LinkedIn as if it's your Facebook. Nobody wants to see your dogs.
Well, that's true. That is a big part of it. I do have one final reminder. You know these productivity workshops that I've been working so hard on doing? The last one, your last chance is tomorrow. So if you're listening to this show now, head over to your computer and go to protectivity.ca. And you can register for our very last seminar. It's at the Vancouver Rowing Club. It's going to be awesome. It's a great location down by Stanley Park.
And you don't want to be outside anyway in this weather.
No. Although they've got a nice deck and stuff. But it's a full day workshop with top end productivity experts. We got Mike Vardy joining us. We have Carol Sutherland who's going to be doing some stuff on email. Brooks Duncan is a part of it. Linda Chu, Out of Chaos, about paper management and organizing your house, is going to be there. And Deb Krieger. So we've got this outstanding lineup of speakers that will teach you how to manage all of your apps, how to manage the flow of data into and out of your computer, and basically get in control of information overload, which we are all suffering.
This is probably ideal for the parents out there who have iPhones and MacBooks, but only use them for email and
yes.
checking Facebook. Because I'm assuming my father, he has an iPhone, he knows how to use Facebook, he knows how to email, and he knows how to use a phone as a phone, but that's it.
Yeah, and the workshop does fit for them, but really it's more for the person that's being overwhelmed by technology, by the person that has 8,000 email messages in their inbox and doesn't know how to get ahead of it. You know, the people that are being overwhelmed by the technology.
That's him too.
Your dad is multi-functioning and multi-purpose. That is all the time that we have for this week's show. I need to thank Melanie and also Julian for joining us, and of course Art Factora for doing a spectacular job there on the board. What?
Put a pencil in for Saturday, July 8th. 13th at the Rio Theater.
The Rio Theater. We'll talk about this again. That's going to be a benefit for the poor folks in Calgary.
Every penny goes to the Red Cross Alberta.
Awesome. I'm Steve Dotto. We'll see you next week for more Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.